Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:52 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 29th. Well, Wall Street was up in very marginally in here today, but followed through at least on yesterday's rather impressive advance. And we can see clearly on the weekly chart that the S&P 500 has now got another higher reaction low, provided, of course, that it holds. Well, this is, I think, rather important here, that we're right in the region of the trend mean, and the index has not yet been able to sustain a move above it. So we're certainly seeing a lot of people jump on the bandwagon that this is a very important move, and I'm tending to agree, but upside follow through next week would certainly help to allay any fears that this is a distribution below the trend mean. So I think there is certainly room for some enthusiasm here, but one of the things that I think is helping to confirm that we are starting to move back into a risk-on environment has been the performance of some of the emerging markets. The strength of the US dollar has been a very important factor in terms of the weakness that we've seen in the emerging markets this year. Now, the dollar index today was pretty much unchanged, but what we've continued to see is that despite the fact that the Chinese renminbi is testing its lows and hasn't really moved, the Asia dollar index has rallied over the course of the last few days, and indeed most of this week, and it is right in the region of the low that we saw back in early 2017, late 2016. If we start to break that down into the individual constituents outside of the renminbi and the Hong Kong dollar, which have a very large weighting in it, well, the Indian rupee has unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So has the Indonesian rupiah. It's also right in the region of its trend mean. The Thai baht is the one currency in the region that did not fall a great deal, and it has steadied up somewhat over the course of the last few sessions. If we look at, for example, the Malaysian ringgit, then we don't yet have real solid evidence that it's steadying up. Well, that's also, I think, representative of when we look at, for example, a US dollar denominated ETF for the Malaysian market, but it is right in the region of the lower side of what is effectively a 3.5 year range. So if we get any evidence at all of the ringgit starting to steady, well, then that's likely to be a bullish catalyst for foreign investors to begin looking at the market once more. If we start working our way backward through that list then and start looking at US dollar denominated ETFs, well, the Indonesian ETF is breaking its sequence of lower rally highs. When we look at we can look at JII, for example, in the UK. So that's a UK denominated fund, has experienced a pretty impressive rebound over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks. That's now helped to unwind a really very exaggerated overextension relative to the trend mean. So we're at a really important Rubicon here for that investment trust, and it's trading at a 12% discount. So the big question now, when we look at, for example, the Nifty, is whether it's going to be able to sustain this move back above the trend mean. Then when we look at the Brazilian market, we're perhaps given an example of what we might anticipate from what we're seeing in Indonesia and India, because the real had unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean, and then we've had some pause, but it's starting to steady up once more. Well, the Brazilian market is at a new all-time high in nominal terms. And when we start to look at that, just a US dollar denominated ETF, then we can see that it has also broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and it's firming from the region of the trend mean. So this is beginning to suggest that investors are looking back at the emerging markets once more. And most particularly, where we're seeing the greatest evidence of a return to demand dominance is outside China. When we look at the Chinese indices, then They have steadied. There's no questioning that, but there isn't a great deal of evidence just yet that this medium-term downtrend has in fact ended. So China's markets are lagging. Well, if we do start to see some steadying coming through in the renminbi following the weekend meeting between Trump and Xi, then that could be a bullish catalyst for Chinese assets. There is an additional point that's worthy of consideration here. It's the relative weightings of the H-share index have changed really quite considerably this year because Tencent was the biggest share in the index. Now it's only about 5% of the index. Ping An Insurance is now by far the largest of the well, it's certainly considerably larger than any technology holding within the index. In fact, if we go down the list, then it's almost entirely banks and insurance companies. But what is interesting is that Ping An Insurance is the largest constituent. It's 10% of the index, and it is firming from the region of its trend mean. It has not experienced the same degree of volatility that other shares in the index have, and it is now exhibiting relative strength. So that does hold out the prospect that we're going to see a better performance from the H shares. Then, when we look at the A share index, well, it was in negative territory again in here today. It's pulling back from the lower side of that overhead trading range. It has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows from following that upside key reversal we saw in the middle of October, and the 2600 point level absolutely needs to hold if the support building hypothesis is to be given the benefit of the doubt. Well, that really is a very clear indication that investors are getting a little bit, I think, antsy about what it is exactly that the Chinese administration intends for the stock market. I saw, I think it was Kirill Sokolov, who is a noted China commentator, but which I would consider to be someone who is in bed with the Communist Party, was making the point that how could it possibly be bad news for the major Chinese technology companies to be in bed with the Communist Party administration? But of course, it's incredibly bad news if the profit motivation for private corporations is subsumed to political ideology. That's something that seems that a lot of people are not talking about, but that's exactly what we're seeing happening. Well, Tencent has been particularly punished, and it has now rallied to break its sequence of lower rally highs, but it wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance in here today and finished in negative territory. Alibaba has unwound most of its overextension relative to the trend mean, but it needs to be able to demonstrate that it can push back up. Well, when we look at, for example, Ctrip, that was one of the leading decliners on the Nasdaq in here today. But it has a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. That's also representative of the fact that the Chinese consumer is under pressure here and has pulled in its wings. Their people are simply not spending as much, and there's been a downgrading in expenditures. Well, that was particularly the case for Tiffany yesterday. So when we then think about what is it that is holding back China? Well, they obviously have got a substantial issue with non-performing loans, and the administration is trying to clamp down, and they are suffering from the trade war and deteriorating sentiment. But when we look at the broader emerging market portfolio, then we're starting to see increasing evidence of a return to outperformance. Well, the problem with looking at the emerging markets as a whole is that China represents an awfully big weighting in the emerging market indices, and it is just underperforming. Whereas there are definitely pockets of outperformance that I think will be appreciated by investors, and that's particularly the case if we start to see the dollar waning in terms of its outperformance, if people, if well, in if in fact the Federal Reserve does signal that they are increasingly close to ending their policy of a rate hike per quarter. Now, when we look at what's going on in Europe, well, Europe has experienced a pretty profound trend deterioration over the course of the last while, and it was barely steady in here today. It has an oversold condition relative to the trend mean, but so far it hasn't really rallied. Well, that's representative of not just the well appreciated challenges that the region has, which are obviously the Brexit negotiations, and then also what's going on with Italy and the potential for the populist administration there to throw up a spanner in the works of the fiscal compact that's holding the region together. But last quarter, China had a negative growth quarter. Well, everyone's putting that down to, well, the fact that the automotive sector is in trouble, but Bayer is going to be firing 10,000 people, and a lot of those are going to be in Germany. Well, that's also representative of the stresses that some of the German corporate sector are under. But it's also representative of the fact that Europe's weakness generally is at least in part attributable to the deteriorating demand for its exports, most particularly in China. And that has hit Germany more than anywhere else for the simple reason that it exports more than anywhere else. Well, if Germany does in fact have a second negative growth quarter, well, that's a recession. That's something that the ECB is not going to be able to ignore. And that would, I think, increase the potential for another round of quantitative easing or some other form of assistance for the region's largest economy. So that's something that I think we need to be alert to, that central bank balance sheets have been contracting all of this year, and we've seen $1.5 trillion taken out of circulation on a global basis, and that's following a decade in which we could reliably expect about $1 trillion to be added to the global balance sheet. So that has contributed to more volatility and ranging this year. Well, we're coming to a potential inflection point for a number of these markets. So I think this is a very important time to be monitoring the consistency of trends. That the clearest conclusions right now is that Wall Street has bounced in a pretty impressive manner. It's one of the more impressive rallies that we've seen since 2016 in terms of breadth, and that's rather important. So now we have a higher reaction low. That's a touchstone in terms of the consistency of these trends. The return to performance in select emerging markets, or I think even it might be appropriate to say emerging markets ex China, is also something that's worth considering. Well, then we also have to, if we think about the challenges that Europe has, well, I think this is a very, well, there is the simple fact that ex Eurozone is doing better than the Eurozone. So that tells us that within the Eurozone, the epicenter, or within Europe, the epicenter of risk is the Eurozone. That's where you have some of the biggest risks right now. But then, of course, you also have the fact that the pound was a little bit weaker in here today, and there is still this ongoing argument about exactly which way this range is going to eventually break out versus the euro. Well, the rate got all the way up to the upper side of the range, and now it's looking like it may come back down to the lower side of the range. But it would need to sustain a move below 110 to really confirm that we're in a euro-dominated environment. I tend to think that we're in for a great. There's the most likely scenario right now with the UK is that there's going to be an election. That it's unlikely the Labour Party is going to give any assistance to Theresa May when they think that they could be making the decisions themselves. So I think that is perhaps the most likely scenario, and that's likely to contribute to additional volatility. Well, when we think about it in those terms, then there is still a lot of potential for volatility, but there has been a very clear rotation. That the rotation has been into the consumer staples sector, and that is represented by companies like Coca-Cola and McDonald's, and it has now bounced from the region of the trend mean, and it is certainly repairing the loss of consistency it put in the first half of this year. The utilities sector, which had been exhibiting relative strength, has also bounced from the region of the trend mean. Well, the thing that those two sectors have in common is the reliability of their cash flows. They are inherently defensive. Now, one of the interesting things that I think is worth highlighting here is jobless claims have popped on the upside. Well, they popped on the upside last year as well. I think that was probably in response to the Toys R Us bankruptcy. And they've popped on the upside in here this week, and that's probably in response to the General Motors firing of about 10,000 people. And now the big question is whether it is going to go straight back down again. Because you can't have a recession without people losing their jobs. I think that's almost ipso facto. But now the question is whether we're not in fact seeing that. So if we do see this measure breaking the trend, well, then that is likely to contribute to more or to a greater sense of urgency in terms of people talking about the beginning of the next recession. We can see, for example, that it broke out in October 2007, but it was trending higher all the way through 2008. So that was the really clear indication that things were changing after what had been another period where jobless claims had been trending lower for a prolonged period. We can also see that there was a very clear base formation in 2006 and 2007. So now the question is whether the rate at which jobs are being lost is going to appreciate. That's one thing that we certainly need to pay attention to. Then I think one of the other things that we can look at are delinquency rates. Sorry, I've it's credit card delinquency rates. Because when we think about that, well, people generally try not to become delinquent on their credit cards unless they absolutely have to. So the 90 or the 90-day rate has been contracting, and but it has been contracting this year, but over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, it's been going pretty much sideways. Well, if that eventually breaks out, that would be an additional lead indicator, or at least a coincident indicator for an impending recession, because you generally see people that get into credit difficulties before they we start to see a really clear deterioration. And if we look at the 30-day rate, then we're going to get a bit more of a volatile measure. But if that were breaking out, well, then that would be something else that we should pay due consideration to. So there are a number of things that we can look at for signs of the next recession, and some of them are getting close to giving us a sign, but not yet. Well, what that suggests is that we're at a very important Rubicon here, that either the Federal Reserve is going to, I think, roll back from raising interest rates and potentially continue to reduce the size of its balance sheet. So at least that would moderate the tightening, but it would continue. Well, that would perhaps be the most market-friendly outcome, that could result in an acceleration that people would start to get very enthusiastic indeed, and we may see a bubbly environment eventually evolve. Or the alternative is that they ignore the signals that the market is sending right now, and then that will create the recession that people are worrying about. So either they're going to get a recession sooner or later, but one way or the other, there will be a recession as a result of the Fed's actions to take some liquidity out of the market, because they're going to continue to do that until they get a contraction. So that's, I think, one of the ways to think about this. The only question is whether we don't see a substantial move on the upside before we get the next recession. Then I'm also thinking about the US presidential cycle, that we are coming to the end of the second year, and we do tend to get a wobble in the beginning of the third year of the US presidential cycle. Well, that could suggest that all these prognostications from the investment banks that you could get a additional ranging for 2019, they could be right for the first few months of the year, but that if the presidential cycle remains intact, then we should have a better second half of the year and also a better 2020. So there are a lot of competing arguments out there right now. What I think is more important is to pay particular attention to the consistency of trends right now. That if we can see upside follow through on the S&P 500 next week, then that would be very positive indeed. The breakouts that we're seeing in a number of the emerging markets are also very important. Then the bigger question is the ability of some of these extraordinarily large cap companies like Amazon to continue to bounce, considering the fact that the strategy that has worked best in this bull market over the last decade has been to buy the dips in Amazon. Well, certainly people have been doing that over the course of the last few weeks. Now it is coming up to test its sequence of lower rally highs. And we will not have an all clear moment on Amazon until it is sustaining a move above $1,800. Well, what that suggests is that this change of leadership we've seen needs to not only represent a return to absolute performance by the kinds of companies with strong cash flows and defensive characteristics, but that we can't see a major decline in some of the previous high flyers either. They still represent very large weightings in the respective indices, and if Amazon does in fact move to another new low, well, then that is likely to represent a headwind for the wider market. Certainly, it's not as if we don't have uncertainty here, but there are definitely nascent signs that things are perking up. Well, we do have these two major events coming up over the next few weeks. They are likely to represent bullish phenomena, and that is likely to contribute to a Santa Claus rally, which will probably replace short-term oversold conditions with short-term overbought conditions by the end of December. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.